At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university, online. That's a degree better. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
Hey, everybody. We got a great one today, you know, for a change, because we're talking about reproductive rights with my guest, Laura Bassett, former editor-in-chief of Jezebel, who writes on national politics and reproductive rights for New York magazine's The Cut and her own Substack, Nightcap, and Sarah Zhang, staff writer for The Atlantic, who's written a fascinating and, I dare say, disturbing piece about the draconian abortion laws in Idaho that make it very, very difficult to be an OBGYN in that state without experiencing what is called moral distress, having to make choices to forego procedures that would protect the mother's ability to have babies in the future, or even put the mother's life in jeopardy in order to abide by Idaho state law. That's what this episode is about. This cycle, there are 8 states with measures on their ballots to provide access to abortions, including 2 battleground states, Arizona and Nevada. All the battleground states are so close. Some voters will turn out in Arizona or Nevada just to vote to liberalize their state's abortion laws and will also vote for Harris. It's plausible that that could make the difference. I won my Senate race by 312 votes. Bush won Florida by 537 votes in 2000 out of over 5 million votes cast there. So it's plausible that the abortion initiatives could make all the difference in Nevada or Arizona, and there are other battleground states where this could make the difference. If, say, Trump wins Pennsylvania and Harris wins North Carolina, Pennsylvania has 19 electoral votes, North Carolina has 16, Nevada has 6. Boom, Harris wins the hard way. It's going to be a long, tense night, is what I'm thinking. It's what I'm saying here. Regarding the 7 battleground states all being so close, with Harris ahead in 4 out of the 7, Nate Silver said last week that the most likely outcome was that Harris would win all 7 battleground states. And the next most likely outcome, that Trump would win all 7 battleground states, because the polls could be wrong, like they always are. In 2016, Hillary was ahead by 6 points going into Election Day and won by 3 in the popular vote. Biden was ahead by 6 or 7 before and won by 4.5% in the popular vote. Anyway, it's conceivable that these reproductive right ballot initiatives could make all the difference in this race, that the issue of reproductive rights will make the decisive difference in any number of the 7 battleground states. Yikes, it is so close. So we're going to discuss Sarah's brilliant piece in The Atlantic about Idaho's draconian abortion law and how obstetrician gynecologists are experiencing moral distress and leaving the state is a sobering one. You know, for a change.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. cold foam cold brew coffee and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Laura Bassett, who's a former editor-in-chief of Jezebel and now columnist for The Cut. And you write on national politics and reproductive rights for HuffPo and The Washington Post and others. And you have a Substack called Nightcap.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Sarah Zhang, you are a staff writer for The Atlantic. Not The Atlantic Monthly, but...
So we are monthly again.
Your article was in the magazine, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yes. So I'm talking about lengthy, chilling piece about the challenges that women and obstetrician gynecologists face in Idaho because of the state's draconian abortion laws. You profile a number of obstetrician gynecologists in Idaho who have experienced what's called moral distress. And this is like 96% of them.
Yeah, the same piece is pretty widespread among OBs. Even OBGYNs who describe themselves as pro-life have told me that they thought the law in Idaho was just far, far too strict.
Well, these pro-life OBGYNs, many of them conduct abortions, right?
Well, you know, there's this really interesting, almost like meta debate over what is an abortion. Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of what's going on here when we're talking about what doctors are doing. Is if you're having, you know, basically a miscarriage and you're helping that along, is that an abortion? I think a lot of doctors would say no, but under the law in Idaho, a lot of these cases would be an abortion. And that's why doctors are feeling like, oh, we have to just turn these women away. We have to turn them away, even if they're bleeding, you know, we're letting them get affected. Even though this would have been before, you know, when Roe was still in place, it would have just been something that hospitals routinely did, that even Catholic hospitals did. You know, I talked to doctors who are themselves Catholic and work for Catholic hospitals, and they said that, you know, this is something we just did all the time. We never thought of this as abortion until a law came along and made it seem illegal. So, you know, the situation in Idaho is that Idaho was one of those states that passed a trigger ban even before Roe was overturned.
Explain a trigger ban.
Yeah. So this was, you know, before Roe was overturned, back when it was still in place, a number of pro-life groups, anti-abortion groups went kind of state by state to some of the most conservative states and said, let's put a trigger ban on the books. Let's put an abortion ban that is going to basically become active as soon as Roe
overturned. How many states had that?
Oh, I don't quite the exact number. I think it's about a dozen, and not all of them necessarily ended up sort of coming to effect just because they were blocked in courts or things like that, but about a dozen or so. Laura might know the exact number.
I think a dozen sounds right. My home state of Louisiana certainly has one, and as soon as it went into effect, it just wreaked havoc across the state. So yeah, and Sarah's right. Some of them were blocked by courts, and some of them just were allowed to go into effect, and I think are still... groups like the ACLU were trying to challenge them because essentially they were just old laws that sort of woke up again once the Supreme Court made this decision.
So where's Louisiana now? Where are they?
Oh, it's Louisiana bans abortion pretty much entirely. The Democrats in the state legislature tried to add in rape and incest exceptions recently, and they brought in women tearfully describing having been raped, such as these horrible situations. Also, gynecologists came in and said it was putting a chilling effect on gynecology across the whole state. The gynecologists were literally fleeing the state because they couldn't do their jobs there anymore. And the Republicans shut it down, would not allow any exceptions, and would not clarify.
Really?
How much of an emergency you have to have in order to have an abortion.
And that is really the substance of the article in Idaho as well, or a lot of it, right?
Yeah, that is very much so the case what happened in Idaho. And I think part of the thing with the abortion bans is that Idaho is not the only state, but there were a lot of legislators, state legislators, Republicans who came out afterwards who said, oh, I didn't know that Roe was going to be overturned. I never thought this law would actually become law. In some cases, even said they didn't even read the law. They didn't really know what was in it. They had no idea what effect it would have. I think some of them were, you know, genuinely shocked to realize just how strict and how draconian the laws that they had voted for and they had passed actually were.
You profile a number of obstetrician gynecologists, all of them women that you profile. One of them is Kylie Cooper, and she went to lobby the state legislature with another OBGYN, right?
Yeah, that's right. They had a meeting. So she was the head of ACOG, which is the American College of Obstetrician Gynecologists. She was head of the Idaho chapter. So her and her vice chair, they went to go talk to the governor's office in Idaho. This was a meeting that took them months to get.
And the vice chair had, I think in your article, had to drive 400 miles. Idaho is a big state.
Yes, yes. She was in the panhandle, the tip of the panhandle, Idaho. So she had to drive 400 miles to get to the Capitol for what turned out to be this 20-minute meeting. And I think they told me that it was like two of the staffers and one of them had to leave early halfway through the meeting. So they came away really demoralized. They were sort of hearing, well, you know, yeah, maybe the law could be better, but what can we really do about this?
And Idaho actually did have a rape and incest exception, right?
Idaho does. What's interesting is that when the trigger ban first passed, it sort of passed kind of quietly. And almost all the people against this law were people who were pro-life, who did not want a rape and incest exception. They thought the ban, this like total ban, was too lax because it had an exception for rape and incest.
Yeah, okay. I understand that. How many states, you know, Laura, have that ban?
Yeah, so I think 21 states ban abortion earlier than the limit set by Roe, since Roe was overturned. And I think as of my last count, 13 states had total abortion bans, or maybe, you know, I don't know how many of those have rape and incest exceptions, but I still consider it a total abortion ban if it's like 6 weeks or earlier, because that's before a woman even knows she's pregnant.
And we're going to talk in a little bit about the race in Texas for the Senate that you've been writing about, which is Ted Cruz's seat, and it is getting incredibly close.
It's within punching distance, as Colin Allred's communications director told me.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in a while. Let's continue on this article, because what struck me was these, quote, pro-life or anti-choice or whatever you want to call them, obstetrician gynecologists who, in my mind and in anyone else's mind, performed abortions because they did it when women face a situation where their health was threatened, the fetus wasn't viable. And when 96% of the obstetrician gynecologists in the state are saying they are facing, what's it called, moral distress? Or
moral distress.
Yeah. There are a lot of those that are pro-life that are supposedly pro, or that's the nomenclature, pro-life, I'll give them that. They are having moral distress because they know that you have to perform certain procedures, abortions early, in order to either save the life of the mother or preserve her ability to have more babies in the future. So that's why these so-called pro-life obstetrician gynecologists perform abortions all the time.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised. I talked to just even my own reporting, I was surprising having these surprising conversations where I talked to, for example, one doctor who practices in Eastern Idaho, which is really Mormon. And he was telling me he thought that elective abortions at, you know, at any gestational age were offensive to him and offensive to God. And then he turned around and told me that he used to provide terminations in cases where, you know, the fetus was had an anomaly that was lethal, that, you know, the baby was not going to survive. So he did not think of those necessarily as abortions. That was medical care that he provided to his patients.
But that distinction gets erased in this piece by the legislature.
Yeah, absolutely. The laws in Idaho, you know, does not have any exceptions for a fetal anomaly.
A fetal anomaly is what it sounds like, if you know what an anomaly is, but it's a medical term. A fetal anomaly is something where the fetus will not survive. Is that right?
yeah, there's something wrong with the baby. And in case of a lethal one, it's where the baby is not going to survive. You know, even if you carry the baby to term, they're either going to maybe die right before birth or die right afterwards.
There's one example in the piece, which is a woman who's having triplets.
And yeah.
One of the three fetuses had no skull. And she asked permission. She wanted to abort that one. And they wouldn't create the exception.
Yeah, I talked to one of the doctors who knew about her case. And this, yeah, exactly. As you described, this is a case where she had a triplet pregnancy. You know, having twins or triplets, it's just always more dangerous. In this case, the third triplet didn't have a skull. It was not going to survive. And this made it more dangerous for her. It made it more dangerous for the other two babies. She wasn't in Idaho able to get what is called a selective reduction. So essentially abortion of just that one fetus. She wasn't able to get that procedure in Idaho, even though it would have made it safer for her and the two babies that could survive. And, you know, the third was never going to survive in the first place.
And that's literally, that's kind of crazy. I mean, that's crazy. Because if they care, if they're pro-life, they should care about the two other triplets.
Yeah, I would also add here, it's so obvious that these laws were written by politicians and not by physicians, not only because of these situations with fetal anomalies and, you know, where the woman's health is in danger, but simple miscarriage care is getting mixed up in abortion care in these laws. I interviewed my own mom for my newsletter Nightcap, and she was...
Was she cooperative?
Yes. She's in South Louisiana, very, very Trumpy area of like the Cajun kind of bayou. You know, she had a miscarriage after me, and they did a D&E, a dilation and evacuation procedure to clear out the extra fetal tissue in her uterus so that she could, you know, to prevent sepsis, to prevent infection, and also so that she could quickly try to have a baby again. And the D&E procedure is essentially the same procedure that they use along with D&C for abortions early in a pregnancy. And so now under Louisiana's law, doctors are afraid to perform D&Es after miscarriages because they might get prosecuted for having done an abortion, even though the fetus has already died and the pregnancy has already ended. So a lot of women, after I wrote that piece, women in Louisiana were writing in being like, I had no idea that this was about miscarriages. It's about miscarriages. It's about so many things beyond just what Republicans would have you believe, which is that like, they're just taking a healthy 9-month-old baby and like murdering.
Trump says this all the time.
Yeah.
He says it all the time that in Minnesota, he says, according to Minnesota law, that they don't ban abortions all the way up to 9 months, as if someone is going to have an abortion at 9 months. But then he says, even after the baby is born, they can kill the baby. I swear to God. Now, I think that, you know, my listener might be going like, okay, has he said that once? No, he said that 1,000 times, right?
Yeah, over and over and over. It's one of his favorite lines.
Yeah.
That they're executing babies after birth.
In Minnesota and in other states. Mm-hmm. He hasn't said which ones, but I guess his crowds believe him. I guess. or they go like, oh, that's just my guy exaggerating a little bit. That's what I love about him.
I mean, you have to suspend a lot of disbelief to listen to Trump talk about abortion.
So not only are, what's happening is, a lot of doctors, a lot of OBGYNs, some of them that you profile are MFMs. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, MFMs are basically specialist obstetricians. They specialize in high-risk pregnancy. So MFM stands for maternal fetal medicine specialist, which is quite a mouthful. Basically, the idea is that they kind of treat the most complicated,
the most difficult cases.
And they see all the things that go wrong in pregnancy. That's sort of what they do day in and day out.
Yeah, as soon as things are going wrong, they go to the MFM. And sometimes they can do things, extraordinary stuff to save the baby and maybe deliver it early and it'll survive. And they're heroes. But sometimes they can't.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people, these women that are OBGYNs who you profile, leave the state.
Yeah, this has been a major problem in Idaho because of its laws. I think in the first 15 months after the ban, about 1/5 of their OBs have left Idaho or stopped practicing Idaho.
And then they were 47th in the nation in terms of the number to begin with. This is the start.
Idaho is already a rural state. It already has, you know, fewer doctors per capita than a lot of other states. You know, Kylie Cooper, the doctor we mentioned earlier, she ended up leaving Idaho to go to Minnesota so she could practice in a place where the healthcare she provided would no longer be restricted.
And she was the one who tried to lobby the state legislature.
Exactly.
And that day told her partner, who traveled from the tip of the, I guess, the panhandle to Boise, that she was moving.
Yeah, she had privately been thinking about it for a long time and had interviewed. And then I think, you know, had already made the decision, but that sort of futile meeting just really was like, oh, I guess nothing is going to happen. It's not going to get better here. And I talked to a lot of other doctors in Idaho who originally thought, you know, we're going to stay and fight and try to make it a little bit better, and then just got discouraged and ended up leaving as well. She's not the only OB she left. She's not even the only MFM that left. You know, Idaho is a small state. It only had 9 MFMs to start with, and 4 of them left or stopped practicing or curtailed their work in Idaho after the abortion ban.
Wow. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Sarah Zhang and Laura Bassett.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com, Upwork.com.
Okay, well, let's talk about how this is shaping up politically. I see that Ted Cruz is in a tight race with Colin Allred.
Yeah, I mean, and that race shouldn't be so tight. It's Texas, you know?
Part of what tortures me about this is that I can't even hope that Allred wins, because it's so crushing if he doesn't. And
I know Ted Cruz is not the most popular.
He's not the most popular in Texas right now.
No, not the most popular in Texas. That's right. And so Allred is just a couple of points trailing him, which is, like I said earlier, within punching distance of Cruz. And yeah, the common wisdom seems to be there that it's because the state is kind of disgusted by what's happening there. It really is sort of ground zero in the grisly maternal health crisis that's been unfolding since the end of Roe v. Wade. Texas already had a really draconian abortion law. Their abortion law is one of the craziest. It incentivizes people to spy on each other and report each other.
Right. You can.
It's sort of a bounty hunter style law you can report someone for helping someone else get an abortion.
An Uber driver, for example.
Yeah, exactly. An Uber driver. Anyone who drives a person. They're trying to ban, or it's been proposed by Republicans there to ban women from using certain highways to even get out of state to go to get an abortion there. I mean, and 20 women sued the state over the abortion bans there, saying they're left in hospital parking lots to bleed out. There was one woman I interviewed who had to bring her own foul discharge into the hospital to prove that it was foul enough and that she was dying enough to get abortion care, because, I mean, the situation is just so bad. Their doctors are just terrified of getting sued. Anyway, so in this climate,
and did their board overlook at the tissue and go okay.
Yeah, like a panel of men. I mean, Kate Cox, petitioned the courts for an emergency abortion in January, and then the Texas Supreme Court overruled that decision and said she couldn't have one.
Well, that was Kate Cox.
Yeah, exactly.
She had a fetus that was not viable, right?
That's right. And she petitioned, she had to go ask for permission from a court to have an abortion in a Texas hospital. And the court said yes. And then overnight, the Supreme Court overturned it and blocked it and said, no, she can't. And she had to leave the state to eventually get abortion care, which is unhinged.
Actually, Colin Allred mentioned that in the debate last night. Can we just play the audio from that, Peter?
It's time to finally tell the truth here. Senator Cruz just looked into a camera and lied to Texans about my position.
This is Allred.
Let's be very clear. You should look into the camera and speak to Kate Cox, who's watching right now, and explain to her why you said that this law that you said is perfectly reasonable, why she was forced to leave her two children behind and flee our state to get the care that she needed. Or look into the camera and talk to Amanda Zarosky, who's watching right now, and explain to her why it's perfectly reasonable that because she had a complication in her pregnancy and was denied care so long that she may never be able to have children of her own. Or to the 26,000 Texas women who've been forced to give birth to their rapist child under this law that you called perfectly reasonable. It's not. This is not freedom. I trust Texas women to make their own healthcare decisions.
Yeah.
Pretty powerful.
It was powerful. I mean, I got chills just now hearing those words, because he's saying women's names. He's talking about real stories there. There was another line in the debate last night from Allred after Ted Cruz said, I'm pro-life. And Allred said, Senator Cruz just called himself pro-life. You're not. It's not pro-life to deny women care so long that they can't have children anymore. When he says pro-life, he doesn't mean yours. Abortion is going to be one of the top, or is one of the top issues in that race right now. Of course, it's still Texas, and Ted Cruz is still leading by a couple points. And I don't think Colin is necessarily going to win, but the fact that he got this close, and the fact that, you know, what my piece is about is that Ted Cruz essentially shut his mouth on abortion for the past year, you know, and it's one of his favorite things to talk about, to bloviate about. He goes on podcasts, he tweets about it. He used to be talking about it constantly after the Supreme Court overturned Roe. And he was just called it a brilliant decision. He celebrated it. And then he's just kind of gone silent for the past year because he knows that he is in trouble, particularly with women in his state.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I was recently talking to folks with Texas Right to Life, you know, pro-life group in Texas, and they have all these ideas for how to, you know, ban abortion even further in Texas, right, if that's even possible. But, you know, they were saying it's actually been harder to get Republicans on board to support these efforts because there has been so much public backlash to how draconian and how strict these laws are. And Republicans are trying to be a little bit quiet because they see it's like not politically, it's not good for them to go out on a limb and really try to curb abortion even further.
What other states in this election have abortion up there as a big issue?
I mean, any state, especially where there's going to be a ballot measure. I know there's a governor's race in Indiana right now that shouldn't be as competitive as it is. And because of everything that's gone down with Indiana was the state that sort of punished the doctor who provided the abortion to the 10-year-old from Ohio who fled there after she was obviously raped and became pregnant. So Indiana has been kind of a draconian. You know, that's where Mike Pence was once the governor, and now there's a woman named Jennifer McCormick who's a Democrat who is neck and neck with the Republican there. There's going to be an abortion ballot measure in Florida. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tight.
There's a Senate race in Florida.
Yes.
Mercastle Powell. That's with Rick Scott, who never really wins by more than a point anyway. So that's really tight, right?
Yeah. And Florida, you know, that's interesting also because of the sort of the two hurricanes that just hit and what's going down there and Rick Scott. But yeah, with abortion, you know, I know that that's been a big high profile issue. Trump has refused to say which way he's voting on the ballot measure in abortion because obviously he votes there.
He said both ways.
Yeah. I guess he's not refusing to say, but kind of flip flopping, trying to have it both ways.
Yeah, he tried. If there was a third way, he'd find that.
Yeah. It has been interesting to watch Trump go from bragging about ending Roe v. Wade to saying, you know, I will be great for reproductive rights, to having Melania come out and 1 month before the election put out a memoir in which she claims to be passionately pro-choice. He seems to kind of realize that abortion is now a losing issue for Republicans and is trying to just completely.
He says he solved it, that what everyone wants, that each state decides.
Right.
That's
right. I mean, but if that's what Republicans, you know, want, then they wouldn't be trying to spend all this money to block ballot measures in the states, to block the people from actually voting, because every
single point.
Time, every ballot measure in the states, even red states, every time abortion has come up in a popular vote in a state since Roe v. Wade,
that's Kentucky,
the
and
choice side has won every
Montana
time.
Or Kentucky had a governor's race. It was
Kansas.
Kansas was the first
Ohio.
Yep.
But yeah, every time they come up, the pro-abortion side is winning. And so now these Republican groups are spending a lot of money to try to keep abortion off the ballot because it's so bad for Republicans.
You've also had anti-abortion activists say like, maybe we should keep a little bit quiet about what Trump could do if he wins the election. For example, enforcing the Comstock Act and using that as basically like a...
The what act? Say it again?
The Comstock Act. So
the
this
Comstock
is like a
act, yeah.
Very old anti-pornography law that has basically, you know, kind of been a dead law for the past 150 years. But you could interpret it as saying it would ban the mailing of abortion pills. You could enforce it to say ban the mailing of equipment used for abortion. So there are pro-life groups who want Trump to enforce this as a federal abortion ban, but also saying quietly he shouldn't talk about this if this is what he's actually doing.
Now, how many of the women that you profiled in this have left the state?
Oh, I think, I talked to, maybe more than a dozen doctors in Idaho, and probably about half the ones I talked to had left. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of this is because those who had left wanted to talk about why they had left. But,
right.
You know, it was crushing. I talked to one OB who was telling me, maybe she was probably going to stay. It was a difficult decision. But she was telling me that every day she drives by her neighbor's houses. One of them is Kylie Cooper's house, which is now empty. And then another, she drives by another neighbor who's also a doctor, who's also an OB, who at that moment was packing up her house that she had lived in for over 20 years and leaving because of the abortion ban. So every day she's like driving by these like two empty houses of her neighbors who used to be OBs that she had counted as colleagues and friends, and just seeing the impact as she drives home every day.
I think one doctor you talked about thought of maybe just living in Idaho, continuing to live in Idaho, but go around to neighboring states to provide abortions.
Yeah, well, I don't think she actually was thinking providing abortions. She didn't think of herself as an abortion doctor.
Oh, it was just I see.
Yeah, but she wanted to continue providing care that has now become, you know, an illegal abortion in Idaho. But yeah, she was thinking, you know, she in particular, this doctor I spoke to, she had like grown up in the military family. She'd always moved. She had gone to medical school in the military. So she had just moved around a lot. And finally, when they had moved to Idaho, she and her husband thought they were going to put down roots here. So she was really reluctant to leave. They wanted to stay in Idaho. And she was thinking, maybe I could be a traveling doctor and stay in Idaho and still continue to do my job. But at the end of the day, she told me she has four kids. She has patients who are 20 years old. She has patients who are the same age as her. And she told me, you know, if I leave, if people like me leave, who's going to take care of my daughters?
Right.
And that's why she decided to stay.
So she decided to stay. That's a powerful story. We've kind of gone through the other states that are weighing this election. I wonder how much it's going to be in, you know, Harris versus Trump. I mean, I think there are a lot of people in this country who are going to be voting for Harris because of this issue.
Certainly. I was just looking at some polling from over the years, and it used to be abortion used to be such considered like a side issue, just like a quote unquote, like women's issue, and something just like kind of tangential to elections. And certainly since the Supreme Court overturned Roe, it's become, I mean, central, like top three for most voters, especially women voters. And that's who, you know, Trump is currently having a problem with. I mean, there's like a massive gender gap looming in this election, as there have been, you know, in the past couple. But I think that's why he held a women's town hall today and is trying to court women voters. I mean, one of the—
Did you watch the women's town hall?
I did.
What were some of the highlights, if you will?
the highlights and lowlights. He focused mostly on, you know, his line for women is, "I'm going to protect you from illegal immigrants." That's sort of his—
Okay.
That's his biggest thing. And so he you know, it was a curated audience full of, you know, one of the women in the audience had a, you know, RNC delegate hat on. So they weren't even pretending that this was a real town hall for real women to ask him questions.
Where was it?
It was in Cumming, Georgia. And it was moderated by Harris Faulkner.
Who's that? Who's—
She is a Fox News anchor. She's a Black woman. She is very, you know, MAGA. She once said, my pronouns are USA. She's, you know,
oh, that's
very
clever.
Yeah, very in the thing. And so, you know, it was clear that Fox had kind of written the questions. Most of the questions were about immigration and you know, trans women competing in women's sports. And then they allowed one question at the very end on abortion. And Trump was able to kind of give his line, which is like, everybody wanted, Democrats, Republicans, everyone wanted Roe v. Wade to be overturned and for it to go back to the states. And he said, you know, there were some states where the state got to vote on it, like Ohio. And he said, and I was surprised by how liberal Ohio's vote was because, of, you know, Ohio chose to keep abortion right.
It's funny that he went down that road.
Yeah, I think that's, and J.D. Vance said that too in the debate, and it's clear that they are using that as an off ramp for being like, you know what, we put it back to the states, and that's how the states are voting, and we respect
that. Oh, I see.
They're trying to say, look, we're not as extreme as we seem, because they know that abortion is their biggest liability this election.
So they're saying, look, the evidence is that if you want to change it, it's really easy because every state that's had the plebiscite on this,
They're like, yeah, we're surprised that Ohio chose that, but that's what they chose, you know. So, you know, that's, of course, discounting the fact that Republicans are trying to keep and sometimes successfully keeping abortion off the ballot in other red states. So it's not exactly a pure democracy happening on abortion here. Not every single state is going to get to weigh in by popular vote.
Right.
In some states, the state legislature—
Putting a lie to what he's saying.
Like in Louisiana, there's no popular vote on abortion. They don't get to decide. My hometown doesn't get to decide. You know what I mean?
Same with Texas, too.
Right. And Texas certainly not going to have a popular vote on abortion. So it's a falsehood that bringing it back to the states has, you know, democratized the issue. It hasn't.
How do states get a popular vote on it? Is it its signatures, right?
I think it's very state by state and whether there's even a procedure to put it onto a ballot initiative.
Well, you have to get a certain amount of signatures to propose a ballot measure. But each state kind of differs in terms of their legal process.
Right. Well, is there anything else you want to add? This was a very moving article, Sarah. I really was affected by it. and learned a lot. I didn't know about, you know, the anomalies that happen that dictate what I consider an abortion.
I mean, I learned a lot too, and I've been pregnant and I have a kid, and I still learned about so many new ways I did not know a pregnancy could go wrong. You know, I think that's really maybe what I want to say too, is just that medicine is really complicated. There are lots of gray areas. And I think even before Roe was overturned, I remember talking to doctors and they were saying, okay, yeah, these laws, they have exceptions for the life of the mother, but there are so many gray areas. It's hard to say exactly what will happen. And you know, medicine is really sophisticated now. It's really, we can do really a lot of miraculous things, but sometimes, you know, a fetus is not going to survive. A baby's not going to survive.
Talk about a situation where a physician with an OBGYN experienced moral distress or yes. A typical, I mean, and this again, 96% of the OBGYNs in Idaho said they experienced it.
Yeah. So one of the Catholic doctors I talked to who works at a Catholic hospital, she was telling me about cases where a woman's water broke early, say at 18 weeks. So at 18 weeks, it is just far too early for a baby to be born and survive. Viability is really more around 22 weeks at the earliest.
Right.
So sometimes when your water breaks early, you know, there's a very small chance that you might be able to stay pregnant. Most of the time, you just kind of usually go into labor.
And there are some like these MFNs, were able to take someone whose water is broken and keep them going till like 33 weeks or something. So
yeah, and that sometimes happens. It's a very small chance, but it's non-zero. But sometimes you can also have another complication where, say, the umbilical cord kind of slips into the vagina and then you might become infected. And that also the umbilical cord becomes compressed. And this is something that's actually really haunted me since I've written the story. Is the doctor would tell me about these cases where woman's water broke, the umbilical cord is getting compressed. So, you know, the baby is not really getting oxygen anymore. And in these cases at her Catholic hospital, they used to be able to just terminate immediately, you know, let the woman recover.
Like ectopic pregnancies, they legalize abortions for ectopic, right?
Yeah.
That's when a fetus is in the fallopian tubes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. So ectopics are usually, in most cases, I think doctors understand that you, being in an abortion van, you should be able to treat an ectopic pregnancy.
But even the state legislature, I guess, said legally those can be performed.
Yes. It was clarified in Idaho, at least, and some other states too, that ectopic pregnancies are not counted under abortion vans. But this Catholic doctor is telling me about cases where someone's water is broken early. The fetus might get infected. They're not getting the oxygen that they need to survive. And she had, in those cases, usually just terminated immediately to help, you know, save the mother's life.
These are Catholic hospitals.
This is a Catholic hospital. And she was telling me now they had to wait. Sometimes they had to wait days and days for the fetus's heartbeat to stop. And she didn't know that it could take so long for a fetus to die like this.
And this is partly of what the moral distress is, because the doctor has to wait and knows that that's irresponsible and knows that the mother could lose her ability to have babies again.
It's irresponsible. It's just heartbreaking for everyone involved. She said she found it morally disgusting, you know, waiting to not intervene when they...
Morally disgusting.
Morally disgusting.
That's pretty powerful. I'm sorry I laughed, but I have a dark sense of humor, Sarah.
I mean, it's sometimes so absurd that you had to laugh, right?
Well, I guess so. Was that, it didn't sound like a lot of the OBGYNs you talked to were laughing a lot, but I guess, you know, especially when they were talking to the subject.
Well, you know, I talked to one pro-life OB who said, you know, if the AG, if the Attorney General in Idaho wants to lock me up as one of the most pro-life ABs in Idaho, then let them do it. And she was true.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I read that. I like that. Was that a man or a woman that OB?
A woman. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you only interview women OBGYNs?
No, but you know, one sort of interesting thing is that there's a real almost generational divide among OBs. A lot of the older ones are men, but a lot of the younger ones are women. There's been like a real shift in just who becomes OBs. I talked to quite a few older male OBGYNs as well.
Well, listen, you guys, thank you so much. Laura, are we gonna win these elections?
Oh, I wish I could say that confidently, Al. I really don't know.
We don't, do we? It's so funny. who said this. Nate Silver said that in the seven states, this is about a week ago, that Harris was ahead in four of them and Trump in three, and that the most likely scenario, because polling has been off in like Hillary and in Biden, the most likely scenario was that Harris would win all seven states, and that the second most likely scenario is that Trump would win all seven states.
Oh. What do you think is going to happen?
I'm going with what you're saying. I think Harris wins, but I don't know. I don't know.
You know, 3 weeks sounds like a short amount of time, but in this election, which has been just completely nuts to watch on so many levels, a lot can really happen in 3 weeks. Trump does seem like he's unraveling.
Well, how about that? What, 38 minutes of listening to music?
His DJ set the other night.
I just
wrote about that on my newsletter. He seems to be unraveling rapidly. And so, you know, I think he's running out of steam. I think he's running out of stamina, and he's getting increasingly bizarre with these appearances and these long rambling statements about nothing. There's a lot of directions that the next couple of weeks could go.
He says those long disconnected monologues are something that's called weaving, and he's a genius at it.
Yeah.
And that he goes from one subject to another, and then he weaves them all together at the end. And he said,
yeah, I must be missing the part where they all come together at the end. I
think it's essential that you're there for the whole thing to really appreciate the sophistication of the weaving.
Yeah, his weaving must be over my head. Like, I could only aspire at this end, you know?
That's what I tell my editor when my article doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm weaving. Just let me weave.
Well, your article made perfect sense, except that I wanted you to talk about it instead of me, because it has a lot of technical stuff that you make clear while you're reading it. But boy, oh boy, to report it back, I was relying on you, and thank you for doing such a great job.
Oh, thank you for having me. I had to convince my editor that we needed to keep some of the acronyms in the article.
Oh, I love the acronyms.
There were a lot of them, yeah.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.